from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, the thriving Bay Area food scene is not immune to sexual harassment. A prominent Oakland chef and restaurateur just took leave of day-to-day operations from his popular Oakland restaurants after 17 women accused him of inappropriate touching and making constant sexual comments. Also, the owner of San Francisco's Tosca Cafe and the owner of San Francisco's Coqueta and Yountville's Bottega restaurants have been accused of sexual harassment. How the Bay Area food world is grappling with its own allegations of misconduct is what we talk about next on Forum. Join us. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Just after Christmas, the San Francisco Chronicle published a bombshell story about local chef and restaurant owner Charlie Hollowell. 17 women were accusing the man behind Oakland's Penrose, Boot and Shoe Service, and Pizzaiolo restaurants of sexual harassment. Hollowell admitted to inappropriate behavior and said he believed in this moment of reckoning for male bosses behaving badly. But Hollowell is not the only prominent Bay Area chef being accused of sexual misconduct. And in this hour forum, we look at how the industry is reacting and take a closer look at kitchen culture and other things that could be contributing to harassment at restaurants. Let me tell you who's joining us. Tanya Holland is with us. She's owner and executive chef of Brown Sugar Kitchen in Oakland. Her new cookbook is called Brown Sugar Kitchen, New Style Down-Home Recipes from Sweet West Oakland. Welcome, Tanya Holland.
Hi, thank you.
Thanks for being here. We're also joined by Saru Jayaraman. She's director of the Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley. She's also the co-founder and president of the Restaurant Opportunity Centers United. Good morning, Saru Jayaraman.
Good morning.
Also with us, Tara Duggan. She is an author and the staff writer at the San Francisco Chronicle who broke the story about the women accusing Charlie Hollowell. Tara, welcome to Forum.
Good morning.
And I want to start by asking you, when did the women start coming to you?
It was pretty recent, actually. It all happened pretty quickly, right the week before Christmas.
And what did they tell you?
Well, I spent a lot of time on the phone talking to people. A lot of it was pretty shocking. So, there's a culture at the restaurants of basically constant stream of really graphic sexual language. And it was at the point where it was so common coming from their boss and the owner of the restaurant, Charlie Hollowell, that people sort of got used to it, but in other ways were quietly it was a very painful experience. For example, a lineup right before service, a lot of times the servers and cooks come together and talk about what's going to be on the menu. If Hollowell was there, apparently the descriptions would all be sexually related, anything to do with food. There would be, any talk about female anatomy, male anatomy. Basically, it was just extremely graphic. And then some of that would spill over into private discussions as well, and which is where it got even more uncomfortable for a lot of women.
And you reported inappropriate touching as well?
To some degree, that wasn't something we could corroborate on a large scale, but everything in the story was corroborated or repeated by at least several people. Many of the things that happened to many different people.
And you mentioned that it was a painful experience for some. What effect did it have on the women who found it painful? Or I'm assuming they were all women. So
the people who were harassed were all women. Some of them left the industry. One woman I interviewed was told that she would get a promotion that never happened. When she tried to discuss that promotion with Hollowell, she said that he interrupted her proposal and told her he wanted to have sex with her. And she never got the position, but she stuck around partly because she thought she would, she said. And even though it was an uncomfortable situation, basically every day she was at work.
Well, we invited Charlie Hollowell to come on the program. He declined, but he sent a lengthy statement, and I'll read most of it to you. He writes, "Among my regrettable transgressions was a real failure to listen to women. I did not give them an equal ear, and I all too often made light of their complaints or critiques or just basic need to be heard and felt like whole, complete humans, like competent professionals. I'm blessed to be surrounded by amazing, powerful women, mentors, teachers, friends, my truly extraordinary daughter, and my partner. This moment has really jolted me. I believe in what is happening with all of my heart. I believe in the work I must do to change both for myself and my community. The main message I'm getting from all the women in my life is to shut up and listen. Listen all the way, however long it takes, however painful or uncomfortable it may be." Now, Tara, he has since left day-to-day operations. So what does that mean?
Well, the company has said that they are conducting that an outside firm is conducting an HR investigation for about 2 weeks, and that he will not be involved in day-to-day operations at least until that time. However, he is a primary stakeholder in the business, and that hasn't changed.
Tanya Holland, as you hear Tara describe the experiences of the women who worked at these restaurants, does any of it sound familiar to you?
Certainly, with my years in the business, I have heard tons of graphic conversations about, you know, derogatory comments towards women. And as, you know, Tara said, to a certain extent, we're kind of conditioned to deal with it. Like, that's just the nature of the environment. But, I mean, it doesn't happen in my restaurant. And I think it's because I'm the woman leader. And I never was able to work in kitchens run by other women chefs, even though I tried. But certainly, you know, it does start at the top. And most of the kitchens I work with in the United States with, you know, that were male dominated, that kind of behavior definitely happened. So I believe that. You know, it can come from not just the chef, but the owners, the investors. There's so many sources where it's just, you know, it can come from.
Yes, we heard about John Besh, the New Orleans restaurant owner, and the issues at his restaurants. And Tanya Holland, I think it was you telling the Chronicle that early in your career, you had, I don't know if he was a chef or an owner, you that he wanted you to wear more revealing clothing when you came to work because you were a server at the time?
I was a hostess. And, you know, I wanted to, comment on that because I know at Charlie's restaurants, I didn't like the way the servers dressed. I mean, I stopped going there a couple of years ago for a couple of reasons, but that was one. I mean, when I dine out, I don't want to see, you know, exposed cleavage or, you know, anything inappropriate. And I felt like maybe that was encouraged. You know, I didn't see it at all around town, but certainly there.
And how was it for you when that person said that to you? You were in your early 20s,
I was,
right?
Yeah, I was in my early 20s. I was just dumbfounded. I was just, you know, I didn't know how to react. You know, most restaurants do not have an HR department, so there's no one to go to report that to. And I just kind of stayed and endured it, you know.
And Sara Jayaraman, I mean, we're talking about, and Tanya Holland's mentioning male-dominated kitchens. Are we in danger of overgeneralizing here about the situation at these restaurants? Or, you know, ROC has done, or Restaurant Opportunities Centers has done some surveys, right, of how prevalent this is. So can you give us a sense of how frequently this happens or how frequently it's been
reported?
Yeah,
we've actually done about 16 years of research and 50 reports and 2 books. So there's just reams and reams of research that shows that, no, you can't. This industry has the highest rates of sexual harassment of any industry in the United States, so there's no way to overgeneralize. And really, fundamentally, you have to understand, the industry right now is the second largest and fastest growing sector of the U.S. economy, one of the largest employers of women, the largest employer of immigrants, the largest employer of formerly incarcerated folks, just huge industry, but has the absolute lowest wages of any industry in the United States. And our research shows that wage structure is very, very tied to the fact that we have the highest rates of sexual harassment.
Because, how so?
As we all know, fundamentally, sexual harassment is about power. It's about the power that a man or a manager or a system or an industry has over women in the workplace. And what we found in a report we did in 2014 was that, in fact, states that have lower wages, especially for workers who interact with customers, tipped workers, that they force women to actually dress more sexy, show more cleavage, wear tighter clothing in order to make more money in tips. That, in fact, what Tanya's experience of a manager telling her to dress more sexy is the norm, not the exception, and that managers tell women dress more sexy, show more cleavage, wear tighter clothing at three times the rate in states that have a lower wage for tipped workers in which they are required to basically live on tips, as they do in California, where we have a higher wage. Now, that doesn't mean that we're without harassment in California. Obviously, we have pervasive harassment in California. We have half the rate maybe of other states with lower wages, but half the rate of harassment in our industry is still the highest rate of harassment of any sector in California. And that's because we still have lower wages than other sectors, and we still require a mostly female workforce to be very reliant on customer tips. And yes, we're talking about coworker and management harassment, but we have to understand that basically telling women, subject yourself to objectification in order to make that money in tips, is at the root of also being objectified by coworkers and managers
and
owners.
Clientele. You're
and
saying,
everybody.
As well,
I mean,
since
our
you're talking about
shown,
customers when it comes to servers.
That's right.
So it's interesting, Tara Duggan, you know, Sarah brings up the wage structure, and it's a little better in California because our servers are required to be paid minimum wage, and as opposed to less than that because they're going to make that up in tips. But, you know, what other aspects do you think contribute to the kind of culture that Tanya Holland was describing earlier, which is sort of machismo culture in the kitchens, in the restaurants?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really long-standing tradition. I mean, it started out with the more sort of macho hazing thing of kitchens that so there's a sort of somewhat abusive tradition in kitchens anyway for employees. And then
because of the stress of being under
and sort of
deadline,
sort of that military type system that's traditionally in place in restaurants, and then the sexualization of the environment, you know, that was glorified, for example, in Kitchen Confidential by Anthony Bourdain. It's sort of part of the mythology of restaurants. There's a lot of, you know, partying after work and drinking and that kind of environment where a lot of people describe, you know, some restaurant environments as, you know, people might be drinking. And I don't, you know, Tanya can correct me on this, but this is sort of part of the lore of the restaurant industry. There's a recent novel called Sweet Bitter that kind of, you know, explained how that works. It was the main character was a waitress and talked about all these crazy parties. And so, you know, it is part of the culture. And so I think there's also this sort of renegade culture where, you know, it attracts a lot of creative people from creative fields, and there's sort of an openness which can then sort of, you lose the boundary sometimes between what's professional and what's not.
But the other things that you're bringing up, Tanya Holland, are structural. Like you were talking about HR, right? That a lot of these restaurants don't have an HR system. But essentially what you mean by that is they don't necessarily have someone to go to if they want to complain about
right.
A coworker
and
or a
the
boss.
The person they might have to go to is another male who's not going to empathize with them. I mean, I am, you know, as a sole proprietor, I'm HR, I'm PR, I'm chef, I'm, you know, all that stuff. And a lot of us, we wear all those hats. And, you know, again, like I said, it has not happened in my restaurant, I think, because I am the leader. And I think this is part of it is, you know, women aren't in leadership roles as much as men in our industry. And so we can't set the, you know, the precedence for behavior.
When you say because you are the leader, how do you lead a way to ensure that this doesn't
happen?
Well,
I mean, when I say leader, I mean, like, there aren't as many women in these roles because we don't have the same access to the capital and the real estate as the men. So I'm look at the sexism across the board, not just the sexual harassment, but it's just something's got to change in our industry. So I think, you know, I think by me being there as the leader, they know, like, they're not going to get away with that kind of behavior. It's just not going to be tolerated. And then if I have any kind of hint of that, it's just, you're gone. It's just not tolerated.
The other description I've heard a lot is that restaurants tend to be very insular.
Mm-hmm.
Why the insularity, and how does that contribute to sexual harassment festering?
A lot of it, as Tara was getting to, it's sort of like, you know, these, it's kind of the land of misfit toys, right? It's sort of people end up in the restaurant business because they might not fit in more conventional, you know, work environments. And I think that might be why, you know, some of the behavior can be kind of wild or whatever. I don't know why it just keeps going.
Do you want to say anything about the insularity, Tara Duggan? Like, you know, how that kind of keeps people from not wanting to basically air dirty laundry that's happening within restaurants?
Well, people definitely talked about it's almost the insularity of the industry in general, because there's a lot of people were concerned if they spoke up that they would get blacklisted, because that has happened. Mm-hmm. That recently was brought to light about Ken Friedman, who owns Tosca Cafe here in San Francisco, but mostly is known for restaurants in New York. That was women alleged in a New York Times article that he blacklisted those who spoke out. So then, everyone knows each other in the industry. So if you speak out, you may not be able to get a job. And that was a concern for a lot of the really brave women who spoke to me. It took a while to get to a point where many of them were willing to use their names because, you know, it's a small community.
And Sarah Jayaraman, you've made the point that so many young women working in food service or in restaurants are their first jobs, and that that can set the tone for their understanding of what is acceptable behavior in future work?
Yeah. So 1 in 2 American adults has worked in this industry at some point in their lifetime. And as I said, most women in America either, you know, this is one of the largest employers of women who currently work in the industry, but most women in America have worked in this industry at some point in their lifetime, in high school, college, or graduate school. And when you start your work life in an environment in which you are told, dress more sexy, show more cleavage, wear tighter clothing in order to make more money and tips, what has to be understood is that what you're being told is not just tolerate harassment, not just put up with harassment, but go out and encourage harassment, elicit harassment. In fact, when we released the 2014 report, around the same time, a new industry segment became recognized in official industry literature called the breastaurant. A new industry segment, which is not just Hooters anymore. It's also not just Tilted Kilt or a company called Twin Peaks, which is one of the fastest growing industry chains, but also Chili's and Olive Garden and Denny's are now recognized increasingly as restaurants because managers tell women, show more breast. And here's the thing I really want to say. Those chains do have HR departments. They do have what's called zero tolerance policies, but we call them zero tolerance policy for complaining about sexual harassment, because our experience with these companies is, despite the HR, despite the zero tolerance, women are basically fired or retaliated against for speaking up or, you know, for speaking about any kind of harassment. And this is why when you ask, okay, what about the kitchen? This is why I keep coming back to, you have a root problem of a wage structure and a culture that says customer is king. And when customer is king, that means that the woman in front, because you got mostly men in the back, mostly women in the front, the woman in front is not just dependent on the customer for her income. She's dependent on the kitchen staff, mostly male kitchen staff, to produce what she needs to get that tip income. She's dependent on the manager to give her a good shift, to put her in the right place, to give her a good table. She's dependent on every other male in the restaurant. Every other male has power over her. And fundamentally, as I said, this is about power.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Sarah Jayaraman, director of the Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley, also co-founder and president of Restaurant Opportunity Centers United, Tanya Holland, owner and executive chef of Brown Sugar Kitchen, and that is in Oakland, and Tara Duggan, who is an author and staff writer at the San Francisco Chronicle, who broke the story about the women accusing Charlie Hollowell of sexual harassment. I want to invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation. Have you worked in a restaurant, either in the kitchen or as a server? Do any of these stories ring true to you? And certainly, while harassment is very often women are the victims, they're definitely male victims as well. Have you ever engaged in this behavior or found yourself being a harasser? Or complicit? Why? Why did you do it? Have the allegations facing Bay Area chefs or restaurant owners caused you to think twice about going to their restaurants? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. On Facebook, you can tweet us at KQED Forum, or you can email us at forum@kqed.org. Tara Duggan, I'm struck by something you told one of our producers in a conversation yesterday, that many of the women who came to you weren't sure that what happened to them qualified as sexual harassment. Why did that strike you?
It was kind of clear to me by the way they talked about, because they were telling me these really shocking things to me that were extremely shocking, you know, that I couldn't imagine happening at the workplace. For example, a pregnant woman, well, this woman did know it was harassment, but a woman who was pregnant and a barista at one of the restaurants, you know, coffee barista, being told by Charlie Hallowell how much he enjoys having sex with pregnant women, and in graphic detail. And, you know, some people were really aware it was not okay, and some of it really crossed the line. But there were some stories where it were things like gossiping about someone's sex life behind their back, or, you know, they weren't sure how to define sexual harassment. I think a lot of people think, well, it's just talk. It's, you know, just kind of machismo. Maybe our president would call it locker room talk. I don't know. But it's, you know, it can be unclear. I think people consider harassment something more to do with actual touch or actual threats of firing, things like that.
Well, let's define it. I mean, the EEOC, the U.S. EEOC, says harassment can include unwelcome sexual advances, requests for sexual favors, and other verbal or physical harassment of a sexual nature. Harassment does not have to be of a sexual nature, however, and can include offensive remarks about a person's sex. Although the law doesn't prohibit simple teasing, offhand comments, or isolated incidents that are not very serious, harassment is illegal when it is so frequent or severe that it creates a hostile or offensive work environment, or when it results in an adverse employment decision. Tanya Holland, Charlie Hallowell mentioned you in the statement that he sent to us, where he said, "I've always admired Tanya, and I'm so grateful that she's taking a lead role in driving this essential change, and I hope with all my heart that I'll have the privilege to stand together with her at some point." Do you know him? Are you friends with him? How has this been for you personally?
Yeah, I mean, I think I met Charlie when he first opened his first restaurant, and you know, I found him to be very, you know, friendly, gregarious guy. And I was a frequent and regular customer, as I said. And I, you know, I just, yeah, I mean, I'm a very forgiving person who can move on. But I'm sort of in a holding pattern right now. I just don't know how to process that because, you know, he said the same thing to me. And I'm just like, well, you know?
Yeah, I guess I'm wondering if you're having that Sarah Silverman, Louis C.K. moment where she says, who she's clearly very good friends with him,
yeah,
but says, you know, what do you do when you love someone who did bad things? And
right.
I was curious if I feel like you're going through the same thing since the world has been described as so insular.
Yeah, I haven't really fully processed it yet. For sure.
Well, we'll have more. We're talking about sexual harassment at restaurants and kitchens and some issues in the Bay Area. Join us as the program continues after the break. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. The Bay Area food world is grappling with its own history of misconduct. As stories of sexual harassment and abuse within the political, entertainment, tech, and media industries continues, and we're talking with Tara Duggan, author and staff writer at the San Francisco Chronicle, who broke a story about an Oakland chef who's been accused by 17 women of sexual harassment, also Tanya Holland, an owner and executive chef at Brown Sugar Kitchen in Oakland, and Saru Jayaraman, director of the Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley, co-founder and president as well of the Restaurant Opportunities Center United. And we're also joined by you, our listeners, and let's go to our phones. Let's go first to Mark in Oakland. Hi, Mark.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for putting this on the air. I think it's long overdue for sure. I have 2 points to make on the topic. You know, my mom was a career waitress for many years, and I remember her speaking about these types of things that happened in restaurants. Fortunately for her, being an immigrant from Scotland, as many other women immigrants working with her, they handled it quite quickly. They nipped it in the bud as a group. and would actually confront the people in the kitchen when they would do such a thing. Now, that's something that maybe wouldn't happen in all cultures, in all areas, but I have to applaud her for standing up immediately. Second to that, my second comment, you know, as a gay man, I remember working in a restaurant where the chef would berate me 1 minute for not being up to his level of performance, and then he would sexually harass me on the other hand. So this is rampant, not only for women, and certainly not to detract from women's issues, but it's rampant in this country, and thank God someone's bringing it to light. I appreciate you guys for that.
Well, Mark, thanks for the comment. Let's go next to Elisa in San Francisco. Hi, Elisa.
Hi there. I so agree with Mark, and I want to say in the 10 years that I worked in the industry, both as a server and in a food prep and then as a head chef, the energy in the kitchen and the of-the-moment kind of intensity creates this almost team-like thing that also erodes your own personal boundaries. So you begin to, this is where the after-hours issues can come up, and also even in the moment, the being brushed by, then having a comment, and then another comment, and pretty soon you have to realize, just like Mark's mother did, you absolutely cannot tolerate any of it.
Well, Elisa, thanks. Tanya Holland, she talks about how the intensity of restaurants means boundaries get washed away. Is that true? I mean, even in your kitchen, right? But how do you stop that from being, from people crossing the line in those moments?
Yeah, it definitely can. I mean, there was a time when there was a couple of employees who used to refer to me and my ex-husband as mom and dad. And we were like, no. You know, I think that, again, I called it the land of misfit toys. There's a lot of people that come to the restaurant business and they create this surrogate family and they step over those boundaries because they think there's an intimacy there. There is an intimacy when you're dining in food. So that gets, those lines get blurred. And it's just, as the last caller said, Mark said, you have to nip it in the bud right away. And now that, you know, I am in control of my environment, I'm able to do that. But if more women aren't in control of the environment as well, I think that's the big issue. We have to, have the same access to these leadership roles.
Taryn Duggan, do you think that's been one of the effects of harassment that contributes to why there are so few female chefs? I mean, that's something that's been brought up quite a bit, right? How there are, proportionally speaking, far fewer female head chefs than male or restaurant owners, for that matter, as well.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like harassment in a lot of the cases is coming out more in the front of the house, but it's obviously also happening in kitchens as well. In this particular story, I was seeing some effects of women not really, some women, female managers who weren't able to continue to advance their careers. But definitely, I think there's some truth. But I think what Tanya's pointed out is lack of access to capital, not getting as much media attention a lot of times. So there are a lot of different reasons that that's happening. And it is changing. I mean, there are more and more women in charge. One last thing I did want to say is both Mark and Elisa pointed out women having to step up for themselves. I think it's unfortunate that in this case, for example, the women had to do the work of talking about this problem. They had to risk themselves to break this story that I wrote about. It shouldn't be their job. You know, it needs to be part of the restaurant institution to help with those problems.
Well, yes, Sarah Jayaraman.
Yeah, would be. Really fundamentally, this comes down to professionalizing this industry. If women and gay men, as Mark brought up, were seen as the professionals, the hardworking, highly skilled professionals that they are, both in the front doing very hard work and skilled work serving people and in the back doing very skilled work cooking, then there would be a professional culture, you know, as in any other profession or workplace. There would be ladders of, you know, that you could move up career ladders not based on how you look or the size of your breasts or how willing you are to let people touch you or harass you, but instead based on your skill and effort that you put into the job. And wages have go a long way to increasing professionalism. A culture that recognizes that the workers have value and the customer's not always king would also go a long way to professionalizing the industry. industry.
Well, Deborah tweets, my second job was at age 16 working at a bakery chain. I had to wear a button on my uniform that said, have a taste on us. I couldn't handle the comments from male customers and quit. Let's go next to Kate in Sonoma. Hi, Kate.
Hi.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm one of the women in the article that Tara wrote about.
Oh, well, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, and hello to Tanya. She's a wonderful woman to have in our industry.
Hi, Kate. Thank you.
Hi. Yeah. I think one of the things that we've been discussing, the allies that I have, is unfortunately it's all female allies. And there's a bunch of decent, wonderful men that we worked with who are not speaking up for us, who are not testifying about what they saw. And part of it is, we are all so curious about the ways we might be complicit, but none of us behaved the way this person with the most power behaved. I am waiting, because I was a person of power in that company for 7 years, for someone to complain to me about the way I may have made them feel uncomfortable or I didn't stand up or advocate for them, and I'm willing to hear that. So I hope that the men around us, who we respect and who were our allies when we were there, have the courage to speak on our behalf. And that can be in our restaurants, those three restaurants, and it can also be to people who are quietly sending us texts telling us they support us, but they are not standing up publicly. It will not change until men play a role in the change.
Kate, thank you for that. Tanya Holland, you are nodding.
Yeah, no, I agree with her. The men do have to play the role. And I was thinking of how Adam Lamoureux from Linden Street Brewery posted on Facebook an apology because he was friends with Charlie and he witnessed that behavior. And he just, you know, basically said, I'm sorry, I was complicit in that. And I should have said, hey, man, you can't act like that. And he didn't. And Adam's the only male that I've heard from. So, but there needs to be more.
I saw a New York Times piece, Tara Duggan, where the question was being posed, why aren't more people in the industry speaking up right now? How do you think the restaurant industry or the food industry has responded compared with, say, Hollywood or other people trying to speak up? Do you think that they have been quieter and less willing to say, yes, this is wrong, this needs to stop, and we should be doing such and such about it?
Absolutely. I mean, definitely a lot of female chefs took issue with that article because they said, we've been saying this for years and no one's listening. And the article kind of assumed, didn't say male chefs aren't speaking out. And for example, we had an essay in the Chronicle from Gail Peary of Foreign Cinema, who made a very strong statement. But yeah, it's sort of like crickets out there. I'm not seeing people making statements. People may be retweeting stories, but they're not making their own statements. And we definitely are planning to do follow-ups to really talk to many people in the industry to find out if they're making changes to their restaurant structure after these stories have come out.
Well, Saru Jayaraman, do you have any thoughts on the role people who may have been complicit in this can play in allying with those coming forward?
Absolutely. I mean, I think a huge part of why maybe we're not seeing, or we haven't seen maybe until now, a bigger outcry around this issue is partly, as was brought up earlier, that a lot of people in the industry, both men and women, don't actually recognize or acknowledge that what they're experiencing is harassment or what they're seeing is harassment because it is such an ingrained part of the structure and culture of the industry, largely because being harassed, as I've mentioned before, is part and parcel of doing your job well. Doing your job well means you get more money in tips. People are pleased with how you behave, how you dress, how you act. And all of that is harassment. If it has to do with your looks and the way you're touched and the way you're treated, that constitutes harassment. But most people have a hard time. It's such a thin line between doing your job and pleasing the customer and thus also putting up with harassment from coworkers, management in order to please the customer. So doing your job and that thin line between that and actually harassment, that there's just very little recognition. So what can people do? people can do a lot of things. First of all, we need higher wages. Higher wages, we have seen, research has shown, definitely reduces harassment. The states that have higher wages have half the rate of harassment. Higher wages reduces dependence on tips and therefore creates less of a power imbalance for women. Two, we have an app that tells you restaurants that fare well on issues of wages, benefits, and promotions. Over the last year, we've been asking restaurant owners, are you willing to let us come into your restaurant and educate all of your staff about what is harassment, what constitutes harassment, and what your rights are? And restaurants that let us come in get a star in the guide. And so customers can look out for that and support restaurants that are actually willing to do that. Third, all restaurant owners and customers can push for and encourage genuine zero tolerance. Genuine zero tolerance means customer is not king. If customer does something, customer gets kicked out immediately, or coworker or manager. And lastly, we've all heard about this fund that Time's Up has created, the Hollywood actresses, that actually is for workers in the restaurant industry as well. And we're working with Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin, for example, who are coming to San Francisco next Thursday to talk about this issue and how workers in this industry can access this fund, $10 million fund they've created for litigation by workers against their employers or against anybody who engages in harassment.
Well, thanks for giving us some of those concrete things. And also let me thank Kate for calling and also for her courage. It's interesting you bring up customers. Elizabeth writes, if customers do not refuse to patronize these restaurants, then all of this exposure is for naught. Don't think for a minute that Hollowell and the others aren't aware of this. We can all be disgusted and incensed. But the real work is to stop patronizing and help workers find jobs elsewhere. Tara Duggan, you talked to some people about their reaction to the Hollowell news because it was a neighborhood restaurant and wondering if regulars might, you know, reconsider going there. What were some of the reactions that you were getting from people?
Well, I did get, I would say at least a dozen emails from people who were not employees who reported being harassed by Charlie Hollowell as patrons, as PTA moms doing fundraisers, as farmers market workers. So the community is aware of this issue. And I did hear from people who said they saw this behavior in the restaurant as patrons. And they're really grappling with what to do because they really enjoy the restaurants. They enjoy the staff. They think it's a very, and they don't want the staff to suffer. It's a complicated issue that's, yes, you know, coming up a lot.
Yes, you had somebody, I think, write, you know, there's a staff who are much less able to take a financial hit than the owner is. And that therein lies some complication. Saru, you're nodding. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, we always, our MO is I don't actually agree with boycotting any restaurant. What we need to do as customers is go and communicate our values to owners and managers and let them know that as patrons, we actually expect higher wages, good benefits for workers, and really good treatment. This is how we've seen change in our industry on local and organic, for example. It wasn't that people stopped going to restaurants that didn't serve local and organic food. It's that they went to restaurants and said, is this local? Is this organic? Do you have vegetarian options? And that demand from customers drove change. And so we need to see that. That's why we created the guide. It wasn't to tell you where to eat and where not to eat. It was to actually go in wherever you're going to eat and say, I want to know, what is your zero tolerance policy? What do you pay workers? As a patron, these things are important to me, and I want to see you do well. I want to see your business do well.
We're looking at multiple recent allegations of sexual harassment in restaurants and kitchens, including here in the Bay Area, on our forum program this morning. We're also looking at how the food world and you as restaurant patrons are responding. We're talking with Tara Duggan, author and staff writer at the San Francisco Chronicle, Tanya Holland, owner and executive chef at Brown Sugar Kitchen in Oakland, and Saru Jayaraman, director of the Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley and co-founder and president of Restaurant Opportunities Centers United. And we're hearing from you, our listeners. Call us at 866-733-6786 to join the conversation. 866-733-6786. You can email us, forum@kqed.org. Post comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. On Facebook or tweet us, we're at KQED Forum. Let's go next to Chris in Berkeley. Hi, Chris. Hi, Chris. Oh, I think we're having trouble with your line. Hopefully you can call back on a different one. Jen in Sacramento. Hi, Jen.
Yeah, when I was 16, I worked in a restaurant, and I clearly remember the executive chef holding my check away from me. Like, you know, that's how our checks were delivered through him, and saying I had to sit on his lap first before he'd give me his, my check, my paycheck. Wow. And I worked as a food prep person. It was a very nice restaurant, very high quality. And my daughter is almost 16 and wants to work at a restaurant close to our home. She could walk there. And I will never let her work in the restaurant industry, ever.
Well, Jen, I'm sorry for your experience, and thanks for sharing what you're doing about it right now. Janie writes, I worked as a dining hall server at a family summer camp for a very prominent university in California. We servers had to line up our carts for service at every meal. The male cooks would yell and chant constantly and say some code word that meant the female servers were supposed to walk into the walk-in refrigerator and expose our breasts to them. Anytime a cook called it out, the server was expected, pressured, taunted to do so. By saying no, I was booed, told I was no fun, lame, being a B-word. The saddest thing is that I didn't even think I was ever sexually harassed at work until I was listening to your program this morning. And we go to more calls. Sharon in Oakland. Hi, Sharon.
Hi there. I was a former Playboy bunny who willingly worked in what is now being called a restaurant. And one of the things that I've not heard any discussion about is why we as women put ourselves in this situation to begin with. Why the culture, I mean, I have my theories, but why we, it's been made okay for us to put ourselves in these situations, the sexualization of women as young girls that says, This is great. This is an exciting job. This is something, you know, there was a bunny hunt with hundreds of women who were trying to get these jobs that are clearly putting ourselves in a position of being sexually harassed. And there's been no discussion that I've heard.
Well, yes, Sharon, I'm actually really glad you're bringing that up. And so do you feel like that contributed to why you chose to work in a quote-unquote restaurant?
Yes, and it's, you know, my own personal history of abuse in a sexual way that made that kind of thing the thing that I stepped into the world with, and it's the that underlying cause of so much of this in the world that is not being explored or tapped into regarding why we as women willingly raise our hand and put ourselves in such a position.
Well, Sharon, thanks for sharing that. And I think you're getting into much larger issues about, you know, our system of gender as well. Sarah Jayaraman, you wanted to jump in here.
Yeah, I mean, not every woman experiences abuse, but if you, as we heard from the other caller, have most women in America starting their work life, their first exposure to work at 16, 15 in the restaurant industry, as most women do in high school, college, or graduate school, and your first experience of work is a manager basically encouraging you to encourage harassment, not tolerate it, not put up with it, but the more harassment you can get, the better worker you are.
I mean, essentially what you're describing, forgive me for interrupting, is not an industry that has it, but an industry that fosters it, an industry that promotes it, is
that's
what you're
right.
saying.
And the more you get it, the better worker you are. I mean, the studies have shown tipping is not based on your service or your, you know, how good you are. It's based on the size of your breast. And if you're a woman, are you willing to touch the customer? And so basically you're measured based on your willingness to elicit harassment. And that impacts you for the rest of your life. I can't tell you the number of senators, Hollywood celebrities, you know, executives that have told me, I experienced harassment later in my career. I did nothing about it because it was never as bad as it was when I was a young woman working in restaurants, which means our industry doesn't just have the highest rates of harassment. It impacts the rest of the economy and how women are treated economy-wide.
Well, let's go to more callers, and we'll go next to Pilar in Oakland. Hi, Pilar.
Hi. I'm calling because I am a former employee of Charlie's. And I'm actually also a worker member of the ROC. And I worked for Charlie for 2.5 years as a bartender. And over that course of time, I got a lot of extra responsibilities. I actually got promoted to assistant bar manager at one point. And towards the end of my employment there, I felt empowered as a member of the ROC to ask for a raise. And I asked, I wound up asking four higher ups for a raise. And at one point I got laughed in the face. I even had Charlie chase me out of the restaurant and tell me why he couldn't afford personally to give me a raise, which was shocking because it would have amounted to $200 a month for me to get a dollar an hour raise. So my question to particularly Saru is, what are we supposed to do when we're in these positions where we feel empowered, but we're still hitting a brick wall with our bosses?
Pilar, thanks.
Thank you, Pilar, for coming on and sharing your story. You know, what you did is was courageous, and we actually need – what we need is greater power, as we talked about. We need more women coming together, banding together, demanding change in the industry, demanding higher wages, and demanding, like I said, zero tolerance policy. So it's hard when you do that and you face that and you stand up and you face that on your own, but it's much easier when you're part of a collective organization that can – you know, collectively bring women together and demand that change on multiple restaurants, not just one. We keep focusing on Hallowell, but we all know he's the tip of the iceberg and that really it's a systemic issue and that we need industry change. So it is about collective power.
Well, on point, this listener, Elizabeth, writes, why aren't these restaurateurs inundated with lawsuits for sex harassment in the workplace? Wouldn't it be relatively easy to file class action lawsuits against them?
And that is why you might think it might be easy, but A, you've got such a large group of women who don't even recognize what they're experiencing as harassment, as we've talked about. B, even within that subset, you have a smaller subset of people who are courageous, able to do something about it, feel like they're not going to put up with retaliation if they want to do something about it. And then among those that are willing to do something about it, an even smaller subset that have the money, wherewithal, time, resources to file a lawsuit. Filing a lawsuit is not that easy. And so that's why being part of an organization and this great new fund that that Time's Up has created, I think will encourage more women to come forward, work with us, file claims, and stand up.
Well, let's go to Lindsay in Burlingame. Hi, Lindsay. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me on. First, I just want to say I didn't even know about the ROC until I listened to this. So thank you. Thank you so much. I've had an opposite experience, but I understand it's so not the norm. I got to work as a pantry chef this past year and had an amazing experience, but I know that that is the exception. I just want to talk about what a huge opportunity I think this is, you know, this shift, bringing this to light. And, you know, what else can we do? Like Glassdoor, other companies, you know, how can we get them to rate on a level of, you know, this is great for a woman to work in? Or how do we encourage more apps, more, I don't know, resources?
Well, Lindsay,
forward?
Thanks for saying that. And one of the things that I think you're also touching on for me, which is a big question that I have, Tanya Holland, which is how are people in the industry feeling right now about this moment and this reckoning that's beginning? Do they feel hopeful and excited as Lindsay sounds, or are they more cynical about it? What are you hearing in your circles, Tanya Holland?
I've mostly talked to my colleagues, other women chef owners, and everybody is really excited about the change that might come, that hopefully will come, because, you know, it's been quieted for so long. And you know, again, the emphasis we're all talking about as you know, women business owners and chef owner operators is give us opportunities so we can lead and create environments that are not, you know, predatory and that are not, because we clearly have a zero tolerance because, you know, we're the vulnerable ones, you know. And that's, you know, I wanted to say, like, Pilar, I think it was Pilar who said, you know, she went to her boss for a raise and, you know, we have the same experiences. We go to our investors or people that we want to invest, and we get laughed at. Being, we don't get taken seriously because we're women. So we're, you know, it's pervasive until we're really kind of in control, and it's like a 50-50, you know, women chefs, male chefs world.
Yeah. Well, Tara Duggan, what are you hearing in your reporting in terms of how the industry is responding to this moment and whether they think it will lead to real substantive change?
I'm hearing a mix. I mean, I've mostly been talking to the people involved in the article, and there was definitely a mix of reactions. Some people feel really excited and hopeful, and others are just frustrated by the slow. I think they wanted sort of things to change very, you know, quickly. So I think it's a mix. I mean, I do think I am also hearing from, I did hear from other chef owners who did talk about how important this issue is for them and has been for a long time. So, you know, I think it's important to recognize that some people are, have been doing this for a while. They've been trying, but there just needs to be a broader change. And I mean, to Tanya's point, it would obviously help to have more women as chef owners, but it also isn't up to just the women to do the work. Everyone needs to really open up to this.
Well, Gary writes, it shouldn't be forgotten that a restaurant group is more than one person. As a longtime customer of Charlie's Restaurants, I was heartbroken to hear this news, but the rumors were swirling and accepted as that's just how Charlie is for years. It was so brave for these people to come forward and break the silence. They are not only brave, they are some of the best at what they do and the reason we'll continue being customers. Sour Jayarama, we have just a minute left. Any final thoughts in terms of solutions and next steps? You've already laid out quite a few.
I would love consumers to work with us to support restaurants like Tanya and others that are taking what we call the high road, allowing us into their restaurants, allowing us to educate workers about their rights. We need legislation. Governor Cuomo has moved legislation in New York. We need legislation in California to protect workers' rights even more than already exists. And I think everybody can be a part of that.
Well, Sarah Jayaraman, Tanya Holland, Tara Duggan, thanks to all of you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to our listeners for sharing their thoughts and their experiences as well. And another hour of Forum is next. We'll actually be talking about transgender history with Professor Susan Stryker. So stay with us for that. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.